Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
Do you have the waning of the Middle Ages?
Have your own library, Preppy.
Would you answer my question, please?
Would you answer mine first?
Look, we're allowed to use the Radcliffe Library.
I am not talking legality, Preppy. I'm talking ethics. I mean, Harvard's got 5 million books and Radcliffe's got a few lousy thousand.
All I want is one. I've got an hour exam tomorrow, damn it.
Please, watch your profanity, Preppy.
Hey, what makes you so sure I went to prep school?
You look stupid and rich.
Actually, I'm smart and poor.
I'm smart and poor.
What makes you so smart?
I wouldn't go for coffee with you.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't ask you.
Well, that's what makes you stupid.
Complit 105, not bad. Music 150, not bad. Music 201, that's a graduate course.
Renaissance polyphony.
What's polyphony?
Nothing sexual, Preppy.
Look, Miss Cavallari, I told you my name is Oliver.
First or last?
First.
Oliver what?
Barrett.
Barrett like the poet?
Yeah, no relation.
Barrett like the hall?
Yes.
Hey, I'm having coffee with a real Harvard building. You're Barrett Hall.
No, I'm not Barrett Hall. My great-grandfather just happened to give the thing to Harvard.
So his not-so-great-grandson would be able to get in.
Hey, if you're so convinced I'm a loser, why did you bulldoze me into buying you coffee?
I like your body.
Hello, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome to all of our new listeners. We have, we're so glad that you're here. We recently joined the Frolic Network.
Yes, and it's a network that is specifically not just about romance, but romance is sort of their passion, but they're about books and comedy and critiques and writing. And it's they have so many great podcasts. You guys should check them out. We're so thrilled to be a part of their network. And to check out their shows, just go to frolic.media/podcasts and check them out for yourself. So thank you very much to Frolic.
And for those of you who are new, since we've been in this pandemic, we have been doing a brand new episode every single week, which means that we are choosing, for the most part, shorter literary sources, novellas, short stories, magazine articles, even songs. Mm-hmm. So if you have suggestions for books and movies, because we are often running out of ideas. So if you have suggestions for books and movies that we can do, there's a few places where you can give us those suggestions or interact with other listeners of this podcast on the internet.
Yes, we do have that basic Facebook page. Be sure to like it, and that way all the episodes are posted there so you won't miss one. But also in our Facebook group, there's a lot of discussion about books and movies. And what we always say, we should say this at the top of the show. First, we're not experts. We're just two friends.
Nope.
Happen to be named Margot. Margot P. lives in San Diego. I live in Brooklyn. I'm Margot D. We're not experts. We're just movie buffs and book lovers. We try to pick things that are pretty easy to get. You should be able to get the book either with the Libby app, or it should be available on Kindle, a paperback. It shouldn't be something that I have to go to eBay to find. And also the movies have to be streaming. We will accept YouTube, but it's better sometimes if it's with Amazon or, you know, all the streaming apps. So anyway, it has to be streamable. It has to be available digitally. And we do have a really rockin' Facebook group, and you type in Book vs Movie Podcast Group in Facebook, and we literally just talk about books and movies, and we have great suggestions there. Feel free to join our Facebook page. It's a nice safe space to hang out on Facebook. People say it can't be done. It can be done, and we've done it. We are also on Twitter. You spell out Book versus a Movie and reach out to us there. On Instagram, you also spell out Book versus a Movie. Please follow us on Instagram. We'd like to raise those numbers. We also have a basic old-timey email, bookversusmoviepodcast, just spell that all out, at gmail.com. You can send suggestions there. And or if you would like, it's so exciting. We have free stuff to hand out to you guys. We have stickers with our new logo. We got these cute coasters that have our logo on. They're adorable. And then, Margo, you said you've got a line on some bookmarks that we're going to get.
I do. We finally, it's amazing that in all these years, we have not had bookmarks, but it's kind of a weird thing. You know, not everybody, it's not as common as like stickers. Mm-hmm. But I did get a line. Yes, I have a supplier for bookmarks, and I'm just working on the layout right now. So we will have those available for you pretty soon too.
Very exciting, you guys. Those are all places that also you can support the show. You can also leave us a review in iTunes, should you like that, or just tell a friend about the show.
Now, today's book and movie, we were just saying before we came on the air, this is one that's come up many, 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 many times. Mm-hmm. And we thought that we would finally buckle down and do it because we are celebrating our arrival on the Frolic Network. And since it's, you know, it's a network that was kind of founded on the genre of romance, why not pick the romantic movie for our parents' generation, certainly. Mm-hmm. Love Story by Eric Segal.
Yes, and you guys should know that it is available on Audible. All of his works are available on Audible. If you spell his name E-R-I-C-H-S-E-G-A-L. If you want to try out their service for yourself, just go to Audible.com/book-versus-movie. But yes, that's our person today. And we have had so many requests over the years for this. So it just seemed to make so much sense. The romance channel with a romantic book. Why not?
Yep. So I love, by the way, that we haven't talked about this, but I so loved the Dick Cavett interview with Eric Segal.
Yes.
And John Simon. It's so amazing. So Margo posted that in our Facebook group that she talked about a minute ago. We are both huge fans of Dick Cavett. Mm-hmm. Like I seriously will watch Dick Cavett all day long. I love that man. And that particular clip was awesome because you had Eric Segal and John Simon. That alone was amazing. And then to throw it into the mix, we also had Rita Moreno and Little Richard.
It's just like...
so good.
It was a salon, that show. You know, they mixed in different personalities and different types of people. So we should talk about Love Story. It is one of the most popular books and films of the last 50 plus years. And as Margo says, in our childhood, it was everywhere. That book was everywhere. Mm-hmm. The music was everywhere. The preppy look, the Ally McGraw look, everywhere. The name Jennifer. How many friends do you have named Jennifer? I have 50 friends named Jennifer.
Oh, in my classroom, you know, for my whole elementary school years, you had Jennifer R, Jennifer H, Jennifer Z, Jennifer L. Yeah, so many Jennifers. It just exploded.
And it's still like when I type in a name in my Gmail, when I'm looking for one of my Jennifers, it's just like dozens and dozens show up. And I don't know. So this was a big deal. What I was surprised to find out, and we'll get into more of Eric Segal, is that he's a writer. He wrote The Yellow Submarine, which is an animated film by the Beatles a couple of years before. He's born 1937 from Brooklyn, New York. He was a classicist. He taught at Harvard University, a very eloquent, educated man. But he also likes screenwriting. I mean, he liked pop art and stuff like that. And so he came up with this idea to write Love Story, and he was selling it as a screenplay and nobody was buying it. And then his agent at William Morris Agency said, you're doing it all wrong. This needs to be a book and then sell it as a picture. And so the book comes out February 14th, 1970, Valentine's Day. And by Christmas Day, the movie comes out. And this thing was such a smash hit. This book was everywhere. People were obsessed with it. And it's sort of like, I guess, coming out of the 60s, hearing about college kids that weren't protesting anything or...
Right.
I think it's a...
good point.
It's a very white, waspy story. I mean, it's a... about
it is.
It's a working class girl the beautiful Ally McGraw plays her in the movie, and she falls in love with Oliver Barrett, the fourth, and that they fall in love, they get married, and then almost right away, spoilers, by the way, we spoil all the details, she gets sick, she dies.
Listen. Speaking of spoilers, the book begins, what do you say about a 25-year-old woman who dies?
Yes. I mean, you loved her?
You know, you literally know in the first sentence what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a tragedy.
So if you don't like spoilers, then this is not the book or movie for you.
Right.
Let alone this podcast. So you know right away, like literally from the first sentence, how the story is going to end.
It's a choice that he made. He's a very interesting person. He was very intense. He mm-hmm. was really into, he was into marathon running. And one year he was on, you know, the ABC Wide World of Sports. He was commenting on a race, the Boston Marathon, and somebody snuck into the marathon to win, tried to win. And there's this tape of Eric Segal just yelling and screaming, that man is a phony, that man's a fraud. And like, he was never asked back again. And Margaret was talking about the Cavett Show. John Simon was a very famous critic in New York City. He critiqued movies and television and a snob.
He was known for his completely vitriolic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he one of the things that he was known for, people would read his column because it was so just sensationally vicious.
Mm-hmm.
He once described Liza Minnelli as looking like a basset hound, I think. You know, I mean, just he famously pick apart people's physical appearance.
Yeah.
In his critiques. So yeah, he had a very notorious reputation.
And there were a lot of people who, by the way, at the time, the critics of the time, the media elites, as we would say now, but all the media, it was pretty evenly divided on this story in the book and then in the film. I mean, there's people who just thought it was pablum and they thought it was cheesy. And there's people who thought it was beautiful and very economic. And it's just, it's a super quick read. It's a super quick film. I mean, there's no wasted space. Everything just sort of happens. We meet Jenny. They fall in love. His father is super rich and just on sight does not approve of her and tells his son, you know, and by the way, what do you feel about they filmed it at Harvard? Your husband went to Harvard. So what did you think of that?
My husband went to Harvard and I went to Boston University. We met in San Diego. He moved and then I moved after him. And so, you know, yes, Harvard Yard in the wintertime, as you know, is like, it's just like that movie. Like, mm-hmm. it's so romantic. It's so beautiful. And Radcliffe and, you know, the Harvard versus the Radcliffe culture. Famously, that movie, because of the way that they filmed it on campus, they were not very respectful.
To say the least.
Of the buildings, you know, very historic buildings. And they kind of, you know, bashed about the place. And so, famously, that movie ruined filming for any other production that wanted to film on Harvard campus. So like The Social Network or Legally Blonde,
mm-hmm.
They have all these kind of workarounds that they do to make it look like Harvard without actually shooting, you know, within the buildings. But I mean, it's beautiful. It does really capture Harvard and the romance of the Ivy League, which is a thing. And yeah, these two people are super hot.
Yep.
Todd and I were talking about this last night. Like, what was the appeal of this movie? And we'll talk, and the book maybe is a little bit different, but as far as the movie, like to me, the appeal is that, yes, this couple is super hot.
They're gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
I could watch them make out all day. And I hate watching people make out, but it's like,
God. But you don't care. It's so great. The wardrobe is great. The art direction, I think, you know, I mean, I say art direction, they're filming in Harvard and on campus. Like, mm-hmm. what do you need for art direction? But it's really super good. I know, like when they're in New York and he's got his apartment there and everything and the racquetball courts. I think all of that is really great. And then, of course, you have the melodramatic music. But as far as like the book and the movie in terms of literature and screenwriting, Eric Segal himself said, like, listen, this is not a great work of art. Like, this is not this is not American literature. You know, this is a quick story that I just, you know, dashed off. The public has responded to it in a, it was in many ways, the response was, and I think John Simon himself compares it to the way the public responded to Valley of the Dolls. Although he, again, talk about vicious.
Yeah.
Wow. Boy, was he awful about Jacqueline Suzanne, who we love.
Yes,
by
we
the way.
Do.
Anyway, I feel like Eric Segal, and I feel like I got this out of the book too, that he's very self-aware to me. You know, he's not pretending like, and just like Jacqueline Suzanne, I really appreciated his take on the story. And I, in terms of the telling of the story, I just, again, spoiler alert, I preferred the book to the movie because I feel like the movie took some licenses with the story that just do not make any sense to me whatsoever. But I read this book. Had you read it before?
I did. I'm sure it maybe the 80s, sometime in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also read it in the maybe mid 80s. And I read it simultaneously around the same time. For some reason, I was into this kind of a book, I guess, because I read Love Story. And I, at the same time, I read A Summer to Die. Did you ever read A Summer to Die?
Yeah. By
Your name is Sunshine.
Oh, my God. Sunshine. That's such Sunshine. A bummer.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
Which is about, again, a young couple. Newlyweds are super in love. She has a baby and she dies of cancer. And again, it's based on a true story.
Yeah, there was a lot of those.
So I read these books kind of all at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I remember liking it as a kid and reading it again. Yeah, it's not literature, but I don't hate it. I feel like there's certain things that the takeaways for an adult are the following. Number one, Jenny should have gone to Paris.
Yes.
Number two, Oliver the Fourth is such a dick to his dad. And I don't understand why. What is your problem? Wah. You don't know what it's like having money and buildings named after you and having a dad who cares about you.
Let's say more about Eric Segal for a second, because one of his roommates appears in the film. The character of Oliver Barrett is based on two men, Al Gore, that Al Gore, who invented the internet and was our vice president for a while. And he's billed as Tom Lee Jones in the movie. I guess, you know, he didn't want to be associated with Tom Jones. So it's Tommy Lee Jones. Maybe. Those were his two roommates in college at Harvard. That must have been the most intense room ever.
Right.
Can you imagine like the poker games or whatever they did to amuse themselves? Also, he was a class poet. He did a Latin salutatorian, whatever that is, in 1958. He has his master's. He has his doctor. He's a very intelligent man. But he also, I think, like I said, likes pop culture and just likes a good story. And he wrote The Yellow Submarine, for Pete's sakes. I mean, he likes to have fun. And he's not afraid of big themes. And so we'll go through it. So Jenny and Oliver, they call meet cute, where she insults him and then he loves it.
Right.
And they start dating. And it turns out Jenny's a girl from Rhode Island and her dad is a baker. And his dad is Oliver Barrett III. There's a building, the Barrett Building. So Oliver comes from a lot of money. In addition to being handsome and on the hockey team, and he plays hockey because that's manly, and he has a lot of issues with his dad. But when his father meets Jenny, he's also kind of a jerk. I mean, he completely dismisses her, like, oh, she's just after your money. He has nothing to do with her. And so Jenny and Oliver decide to get married, like right out of college. Like you said, she was going to go to Paris and he wants to go to Harvard Law School. Like, they're going to be busy, but she gives it up to marry him.
Now that tells me how much you know about music.
I know enough.
Wise up, would you please, Barrett? I was not great. I was not even all Ivy. I was just okay. Okay?
Okay. But I mean, like, you should always keep at it.
Who said I'm not going to keep at it, for God's sake? I'm going to study with Nadia Boulanger, aren't I?
Who?
Next year. I have a scholarship in Paris.
Paris?
Yeah, I've never been to Europe. I can hardly wait.
Hey. How long have you known about this?
Come on, Ollie, don't be stupid, would you please? It's inevitable.
What is?
That we're going to graduate and go our separate ways and that you're going to go on to law school.
What are you talking about?
You're a preppy millionaire and I'm a social zero.
What does that have to do with going our separate ways? We're together now, aren't we? We're happy.
Look, Harvard is like this big Santa Claus bag stuffed full of all kinds of crazy toys. But when the holiday is over,
this has
they
been
come
a little
home,
bit more than a holiday,
out, and
Jenny.
And you've got to go back where you belong.
You're going back to Cranston, Rhode Island, and bake cookies?
Pastries, and don't make fun of my father.
Then don't leave me, Jenny. Please.
Yeah, but what about my scholarship, and what about Paris that I've never seen in my whole goddamn life?
And what about our marriage?
Who said anything about marriage?
I'm saying it now.
You want to marry me?
Yeah.
Why?
Because.
That's a good reason.
And then he graduates from law school and it's kind of tough because she's got to help him pay the bills. He actually at one point whines about like, how do I get a scholarship? Wah! I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you're not privileged enough. Like, I was like, oh, but Ryan O'Neal's so cute. It's really, it's a challenge.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really, really handsome. But he, so they go through law school together. She teaches at a private school, puts him through college. He finally gets this great gig. They move to New York City. I wrote it on my notes. Like, I have questions about their finances because they can afford a nice apartment in New York City with a doorman. Yeah. That's nothing to sneeze at. And then they also can afford a racquet club membership.
Uh-huh.
But she wonders, hey, do we have enough money for a cab to go to the hospital? I don't feel so well right now. And then,
yeah.
And then when, I was like, what? How much could that have been? I mean, they're in the Upper West Side. It could probably should be easy to get to the hospital. But, and then we find out that Jenny has, it's a very odd scene, but
it's weird.
Yeah.
It's strange in the book. And in terms of, again, I really feel that the story is told more plausibly in the book than in the movie, particularly when it comes to when Jenny gets sick. In the book, the doctor advises him to keep it from Jenny for as long as possible. And eventually Jenny gets so sick that she, you know, we have to face facts, but it's not like it, like in the movie, it's very implausible to me the way that all rolls out.
Do you know whose fault it is?
I wouldn't use the word fault, Oliver.
Okay, put it your way. Two 24-year-olds can't seem to make a baby. Obviously, one of us is malfunctioning. Who?
Jenny.
All right, then we'll adopt kids.
Oliver, the problem is more serious than that. Jenny is very sick.
Define very sick.
She's dying.
That's impossible.
I'm sorry to have to tell you this.
That's impossible. Well, it's a mistake. It has to be.
We repeated her blood test 3 times. There's no question about the diagnosis. She'll have to be told soon. We can withhold treatment for a little while, but not for long. We'll have to begin therapy sometime during the next few weeks.
She's only 24. Would it be painful?
Hopefully not. You'll, of course, want to speak to a hematologist. I can refer you to Dr. Addison.
Yeah. What do I do? I mean, what can I do for Jenny?
Act as normal as possible. For as long as possible. That's really the best thing.
Normal. Normal. Okay, I'll be as normal as hell.
Yeah, there are a lot of like, huh, moments mm-hmm. in the plot that I don't understand.
Well, they're supposed to be so close that they are just like one person. So why is he lying to her about one of the most important things or neglecting to include her in the decision at a key point where, you know, like, let's get the second opinion and somebody who seems to have a pulse, you know, telling us what to do. We're not quite sure what she has. I believe it's leukemia is what she has.
It's not completely clear.
Yeah.
Book, I think it's referred to as the blood disease, which would be accurate, but you're right.
And so Oliver is going to take care of her and give her the best of what they can do for her, the best people on it, and he has to borrow the money from his father to pay for the hospital. I'm like, well, wouldn't he have insurance? And also, isn't he at a fancy pants law firm? Like,
thank you.
Wouldn't they like throw him a few bucks if he needed it? Like if he just, look, guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You live in like the furniture and artwork in their house alone, like $5,000, sell two paintings,
yeah.
Oliver, not $5,000 if you desperately need it that much. Secondly, like early on, and this drives me crazy in the book and in the movie, early on in their marriage or even before they're married, but early on, Jenny says to Oliver, the one thing I want is for you to reconcile with your father. Your father loves you. Make peace with your father. And this is the one thing that he steadfastly refuses to do, even after she's dead.
So he gets $5,000 from his father, which is the equivalent of like $30,000 in today's money. It's a big ask. But his father does it. It's Ally McGraw. It's Ryan O'Neill, John Marley. All these people were nominated for Oscars. And then Ray Milland is the father. Right? I love Dial M for Murder. He's great. But he says to the son, well, doesn't she work? And Oliver won't tell him what's going on. He's still.
Right.
And so the man's like, oh, you probably got a girl in trouble, huh? And then gives him a $5,000 check.
And I got to say. If I'm that dad and my child has acted the way Ryan O'Neill acted toward Ray Milland, that would be my question too.
Yeah.
Like you've been a complete jerk to me for your entire life. Now you want money. You mind telling me why? Like, I want to help you.
Right.
Please just let me in a little bit and let me know, you know, do you need my help? I can help more, you know?
His dad and probably knows somebody could treat her.
Oh my God.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Not only that, obviously he has the connections. Why would you not avail yourself? I know. It just makes me nuts.
He makes a lot of bad decisions. It's just crazy. But it's Ryan O'Neill in 1970. He was in Paper Moon, What's Up, Doc, which I really love. He's going to be also in Barry Lyndon, which is a movie people keep asking us to cover. John Marley plays her father. She calls him Phil. She doesn't call him Dad. And he was in The Godfather. He was the studio head that finds the horse head in his bed. Spoiler. But yeah, it's this really great cast. They're really good looking. You want to root for them. I mean, I think it's just that's Ryan O'Neill's charisma that he does all these dickish things, but you still kind of feel bad for him. But it's very famous in a couple of things. One's for the chunky knits and the knitwear and the preppy wear look everywhere. There's the music, and then there's the line, love means never having to say you're sorry, which is absurd.
I forgot my key.
Jenny, I'm sorry.
Don't. Love means never having to say you're sorry.
It makes no sense. What on earth does it mean?
It's not my reality.
What?
Yeah. They have an argument, he and Jenny. He's running all over looking for her. He finds her back at home and she's crying about something. And then he says, I'm so sorry. And she goes, love means never having to say you're sorry. And I guess that's it. And then at the very end, Jenny, and there's this thing called the Ally McGraw illness, which is in a movie when somebody looks amazing on their deathbed. And she's,
they couldn't look healthier.
Couldn't look like she could just pop right up and do a samba or something. Like she's, and she's just laying there. I'm like, what did that $5,000 pay for? Look, those curtains. I mean, there's like one tube in her arm. There's nothing. But it's, we're supposed to think that this, she's on her deathbed. She's talking to Oliver. And I wish she had said in that scene, like, you need to talk to your father. You need to make up with him. But instead, she's yelling at him about, don't be mad about not taking me to Paris or something like that. It's like all these, and she's dying. She's going through a lot.
It's not your fault. That's the only thing I'm going to ask you. Otherwise, I know you're going to be okay. Screw Paris.
What?
Screw Paris and music and all that stuff you thought you stole from me. I don't care. Don't you believe that? Then get the hell out of here. I don't want you at my goddamn deathbed.
I believe you. I really do.
It's better. Would you please do something for me, Holly? Please hold me. I mean, really hold me next to me.
But just as she dies and Oliver leaves the room, it's the exact point when his father shows up at the hospital. And his father's like, I am so sorry. I just heard what happened with Jenny. Is she okay? And then Oliver's like, no, she's dead.
So again, in spite of the way that that his son has acted, the moment he finds out that his son is hurting, drops everything and flies like the devil to be by his side and be there for him. And once again, love means never having to say you're sorry.
And then
you just have
pouts.
A baffled plan.
And he just pouts. He just walks over and sits on a bench. It's like, what? But in spite of it was a $2 million budget. It was very low budget. Robert Evans was the head of Paramount. His wife was Ally McGraw. They were married at the time. The movie makes $106 million.
Yeah.
Which is one of those first $100 million films, which was outlandish. It was such a craze. They had openings all over the world. And the stars were flown out there. And then 2 years later, it's on television in the States. And it was the highest rated TV movie on TV, excuse me, of the year, 1972. It like 20%, 26% of the audience was watching it, which is just like, what? It was a big deal.
And again, I mean, I think it's because, one, those two people were so hot.
Yep.
And just the cinematography, mm-hmm. you know, just the whole look. I think it definitely seems to have, like, captured an era like you said, nobody's protesting the war, mm-hmm. but it's also very, and I think this must be Eric Siegel, you know, the book and the movie do have a self-awareness that these two young people, even Jennifer, you know, that they're in this, they're living in this, the upper echelon of academia, you know, and access to privilege, you know, oh, we're these are our hard luck times. They're at, what is it, like three pay cycles?
Yeah.
they're scrambling for money. I mean, it's not that long. And they're, at every point, they know that that situation is temporary, you know, that they're only going to be scrimping and saving for a while, a short while. So it's never like they're never starving. They're never really in any kind of danger.
No, you never sense that. Yeah.
No. And so, yes, then when you find out that she's sick, you know, they're not exempt from that. So I think that's an interesting take on that world. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a fun book. And you get sucked into that movie. I mean, you just do. I just want to watch their clothes, the wardrobe changes.
Yeah.
And the backdrops change. Her hats. Oh, my gosh. When they go to Oliver's, he takes her to his parents' house for the first time. And they're sitting in the whatever drawing room that they're sitting in. There's this gargantuan floral arrangement behind the mom. Like not even on the main table, just like on some side table in the background is this flower arrangement that's bigger than I am. Just huge on the table just because, you know, Thursday, because we're to assume that they're sort of showing up unannounced. It's quite something. It, you know, it's really eye candy. You really can't look away. Even the dorm life is kind of fun to see. Like when he's running through and he's going through all the rehearsal rooms mm-hmm. at the college looking for her. That's, I mean, it's very fun. It's a very fun snapshot. I mean, it's a tragic story. It's a very fun snapshot of that time, I think. My dad had an MG like that.
Oh, really?
My parents were married. Yeah, my parents were married in 1970. So it's definitely of its time in a way, I think, that probably a lot of other things weren't. So I get it. I totally get the appeal of it. And yeah, it's not great literature. It's not the greatest movie ever made, but it's fun.
It's very watchable. It's extremely mm-hmm. watchable. I mean, I'm following it along and I'm going along with it. And I think they look great together. And I'm genuinely, you know, I have the sads that she's sick and she's dying. And I think Oliver is such a creep to his dad. Just does not understand how much privilege he's had in his life. Like, seriously.
Yeah. There's never any grounds for it ever. Really.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, oh, he hit me. Oh, he sent me away to a boarding school and never came to visit me. Nothing.
No.
No. I mean, not to make light of either of those things, but no plausible grounds for the just insufferable behavior that he has towards his dad.
He's very immature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was a follow-up called Oliver's Story, which is
yes.
a few years later. And we should say that Eric Siegel, he wasn't married at the time that he wrote it, but he did get married in 1975 and he stayed with his spouse, Karen Marianne James, until 2010, which was when he passed away. And they were living in England and his daughter writes the foreword to the book. And talks about they really did have a big love story, that his father was completely besotted with their mother and just loved her to pieces. And it was like the real deal. So it comes from a true place.
Yeah. You know, I do appreciate there is, you know, it doesn't go into some of the real like gritty detail of A Summer to Die, for example, or Sunshine. But you do, yeah, you feel, I think his sincerity comes across, his earnestness with the story. I never feel like he's gratuitously, you know, milking anything.
He's passionate about it.
Yeah. You know,
he defended himself in front of John Simon, that snob.
I think very well.
Very well.
He really held his own, and agreed when he felt it was right to agree and disagreed when he, similarly. Yeah, it was fun reading this again and watching this again. I hadn't seen it for many years.
Yeah, and it's on HBO Max. HBO Max is killing it for me. They have lots of great movies on
there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are we doing next?
Well, we have a few ideas. Somebody mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned this to you last time, but Derby Girl. It's about women in roller derbies. And the movie was called Whip It with Drew Barrymore.
Oh.
And the book is called Derby Girl. It's like 270 pages. Once again, Away From Her, Dangerous Liaisons. What else did we have? Heartburn. A Simple Plan. That's a little bit long.
Oh my gosh, I haven't seen that in so long. Let's see.
Being There.
I thought we did Being There. We didn't?
No. And that's only 162 pages.
Okay. I kind of feel like doing, is it too soon after Harold and Maude to do Being There?
Not for me, but.
Okay.
I haven't seen the movie in a really long time. And I didn't know it was based on a short story, so.
I did not either.
So that could be good. Jerry Kaczynski is the author.
Okay. I didn't know till our good listeners in the Facebook group brought it up.
They're really amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's going to be Being There. Oh, between book and movie, which do you like better?
Oh, it's a toss-up. I mean, I didn't like some of the plot points, the choices that were made with the plot in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought made it seem a lot less credible. But again, you know, the cultural phenomenon and all the other parts, the components of the movie, I guess the movie.
Okay.
But it's slight edge. What about you?
I'm the same way. I think the movie is a classic. It's so watchable. There's so much charisma between the leads. They're very believable as like two young kids in love. It stands up to the test of time. They look like they could have filmed it now. That looks great. Considering it's 1970, it's 50 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. So next time we'll be doing Being There. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. And my blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com. And all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama.
All right, you guys. So we'll be back next week with a new episode. In the meantime, it's okay to say sorry to someone you love.
Oh, please, you should. You
absolutely
must.
Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You could find more outstanding podcasts to subscribe to at frolic.media/podcasts. If you want to find us on Facebook, we have a basic Facebook page, Book vs. Movie. We also have a private Facebook group. Just type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Just spell that out. Our email address is bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show, we do have a Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/bookversusmovie. We also have a promotion with Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/bookversusmovie to check out their service for yourself. We record our shows using the Handy H6N, donated to us by generous fans from the show who joined our Patreon page. Thank you all so much. We so appreciate it. We'll be back soon with a new episode. Thank you.
widely acclaimed new novel of the 1970s, Ally McGraw and Ryan O'Neill star in the number one bestseller by Eric Segal, Love Story.